This is The Lay of the Land with academic and deep thinker Luba Mayakiso.
Luba Mayakiso, how are you?
Very well, Howard, my friend, but I see you've been naughty. Other than that, I'm good.
I haven't been. I've been cyber-bullied is what I've been.
Howard, you respond to a tweet from a lady who is holding up a clenched fist and an assault rifle.
Stop laughing at it, Zanatis. You're not being funny.
Right? Yeah. An assault rifle, clenched fist, and... The little caption says, protecting black people and black interests in a country fully committed to serving white interests in memory of Mamuini. What were you expecting?
All right, so maybe it wasn't the smartest person to take on Twitter, but it... yeah, look, when you put it that way, Luba, yeah, it does sound like I bear some responsibility here, but... But I really was coming from a genuinely good place. I swear to you I was. I wasn't attacking black people. I just wanted to see how I could help the person that she was tweeting about, which was this doll manufacturer.
No, I appreciate that fully, but I'm just saying that I think, you know what? I looked at this lady's profile. I mean, she's fully behind Juju, Black Land First, and all of those issues. So this is somebody who's seriously aggrieved. I think your article, your call was certainly well-meaning, and I have no problem with that. But what I found very interesting was I copied it, your article, and put it onto a WhatsApp forum that I manage, and two ladies responded. I mean, they went to town on it. I showed you the responses. Eventually, I said, ladies, I'm keeping out of this because this is not going the way that I thought. But what I found interesting was these are the same two ladies who were full of praise when you were commenting about empowering black women in the workplace. So they were very supportive of you there. But for some reason, on this black doll thing, you were on your own.
But I wonder why that is. Is that because this takes, and I said to Zanatti earlier, perhaps the validity in the criticism is that I could never really go back, take myself to a place that I fully understand this. I can empathize with it. I can rationalize it. And I can try and feel the grievance that people have experienced. But I can't ever really know how to relate this. I'm relate to it, A, because I'm male, and B, because I'm white. I've never experienced that sort of thing. I can tell you what it feels like to be marginalized because I'm Jewish. And I've grown up in a very, very staunchly, especially in the earlier years, staunchly Christian country where it was made very, very clear that if you weren't Christian, you were the other. So I can relate to it maybe on some level. But the reality is that perhaps this takes people back and the people that got most upset with me to the most vulnerable stage of their life. Could that have been the issue?
It could, but you know what? I'll offer you two views. Don't shoot me for them. The one where I see that you got a lot of flack was around black dolls for black babies. Mm-hmm. Now, you felt that maybe from a marketing point of view, that was narrowing the potential base of clients or whatever. But you pointed out that black dolls for black babies wasn't quite the right tagline or the right approach. All my friends who took offense to your article were offended by this
that
whole
line.
Or black babies issue. Somehow you had no business going there. And I think whilst you meant well by saying host a radio show, maybe we could talk about this thing, the view that I'm getting when I look at it is that somehow you criticized her marketing approach. So whilst the initiative was good, so the question was, were you genuinely complimenting her? Because a lot of people focused on almost the criticism rather than the compliment. And then they lost everything. So the fact that you as a white male have the nerve to actually criticize how she's going about it, that becomes the narrative.
So the interesting part of that, before you carry on, Luba, it's important to note this, that the person that I was criticizing was not the doll manufacturer. They were very, in fact, it turned out when I had a conversation with her late last evening, she was very upset with what this person had done.
Yeah.
And she said to me, because it isn't meant, it meant, yes, of course, the whole thing is the reason she started this business is because there's a shortage and she perceived a shortage of black dolls for this market, and little black kids, I think little white kids as well, everybody should be having them, but either way, there was a shortage. So I was saying to this other person who actually isn't part of the business, don't say that, because that's kind of limiting it. Here, I'm a white guy, I want to help, so let me help. Don't just say it's only, so, you know, and in fact, then she came back and said, you don't know who I am. I tweet for black people only. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm saying, well, that's not really how Twitter works. But all right, my intentions weren't to say that they should, that the marketing approach was wrong. I was saying that this person with the assault rifle, perhaps maybe that was the mistake that you pointed out as well, was actually being unfair to the person whose business it was. And it did turn out that that was the case.
No, certainly agree with you. And I think it does touch on a sore nerve. I mean, we do get defensive. I've given you an example before where I've said nursery school rhymes. I didn't grow up with nursery school rhymes at home, and I only encountered that at school. So I would get touchy sometimes about that subject because it's not something that was there in my past. And I've had to recognize that my kids have grown up with that kind of environment and need to embrace it. But whenever somebody steps into an area that for me is a sore point, I think our responses get clouded by our own emotions and feelings rather than looking at it coldly. And I do think that the doll issue could be that, because I think anybody should be able to buy whatever doll they want. I must confess, maybe my perception of color is not correct. I've never really grown up looking at my kids and saying Barbie should be this color, they should be represent all the genders and all the racial groups. No, I haven't. But I would certainly think that if there are dolls out there, kids should be able to buy whatever doll they want. But having said that, I think she has to concede that traditionally dolls have been white. So it's going to be an uphill struggle to change that that perception. And I think the real challenge they face is that most kids will instinctively go for the doll that they've always seen and bought. So it's going to take quite a while. But I think the question really, Howard, is are you entitled to make the comment that you did? And I think you are. But we live in an environment where people are very sensitive and are very protective. And therefore, again, it comes back to what you and I have been talking about for quite a while, this whole identity politics. If you perceive to be from the wrong racial group, you are then deemed to have no business commenting on something. And that's when I followed the thread. That was almost the attack on you, that you're white, you got no business. You have never lived through this experience.
Right.
It has nothing to do with experience.
Right.
You know, because I didn't grow up with dolls either, black, white or whatever, but I can still make a comment. So are you going to exclude everybody who's white? What about black males who didn't grow up with dolls? What about black ladies who didn't grow up with any dolls? So I think it's almost a knee-jerk response in anger.
Right.
And my view to the guys on my post was, guys, there's some things that we need to move beyond. It's very painful, but we have to move to be able to restore pride and get our society united. There are some things that we have to listen to other people and move forward.
And I think what this showed me very, very interestingly is there's such raw and painful issues that we've just got to find a way of talking about them, because they're going to keep whacking us every time we don't suspect it. In fact, Tanati was talking about earlier when she had suffered a trauma, and she went to a counselor to deal with the post-traumatic stress, and he said, you've got to find a way of dealing it with it in of itself. Otherwise, it's going to attack you in all other areas of your life. And I think that's exactly right.
But remembering, Howard, that counseling is not a norm in the black community. Right. So you're dealing with something that traditionally the way you deal with trauma is you speak to the elders.
Mm-hmm.
And the elders generally will tell you that, my boy, my girl, this happened to me before, just sit tight and you'll be fine. So it's not counseling, more than just grit and bear it and you'll be okay.
Right. Right, 100%, 100%.
So, very interesting. So I applaud her for getting counseling, but, you know, that's still, I think, I would say a small portion in the black community right. uses that. So if you look at the experiences of apartheid, people just deal with them as they go forward. Nobody, I think, has stepped up and said, this is what I dealt with. You know, I'm busy trying to write a few chapters of my first book and looking at my, I tried to look at my dad's childhood and I saw a lot of brokenness, which I think influenced how he parented, but he never had counseling. You know, there was no counseling to deal with it. And I didn't think it was a big problem until I sat down and started trying to understand how he had raised us and what he had gone through. But you expect it to just move on.
Absolutely. Lubi, before I let you go, can we just spend 1 minute just talking about one of my least favorite politicians, Patricia de Lille. She has now launched a new political party. It's not called Good for Nothing. What's it called?
For Good.
Oh, For Good. For Good.
No. That's not the name. Apparently, it's what? A consultation at the moment. The name will come next month.
Oh, I thought that was
the
name.
This is like the Akhang thing. Everybody, I think, the good doctor who left the ANC and Akhang, what people tend to do, I see, is that they have some organization, a consultative forum, and then they morph to a party. So what I'm told, look, I must confess, I know some of the guys who are sitting close to her because I've worked with some of them in the corporate world. So the thing that struck me as interesting was this. They had this... I was sent a link and I was told, please open and view this. So when I followed the Facebook page, the posts, some of them were 2 months old. So I said, guys, explain this to me. If you were posting on this For Good site 2 months ago, it means that you knew that you were going this direction. Mm. So I think the interesting thing for me is I think Patricia must have known a couple of months back that she's walking away from the DA and she's going to start something. She's saying that she's been overwhelmed by people, thousands of people saying, you've got to stay in politics, you're relevant, start a party. What I see is that a lot of the members who left the city of Cape Town with her from the mayoral committee and councillors are behind her and are working with her. Now, I had a brief chat with some of them yesterday and they say to me, they've been overwhelmed. I think they've got over 20,000 likes on Facebook, but they say they've had thousands of people, predominantly in the Western Cape, saying, please stay and we need you as a force for change. They claim that the support is broader. Their initial vision was the Western Cape and Cape Town in particular, but they say they've been getting requests from all over the country. So they're looking at it that way. They concede that they're starting late out of the blocks. Now, the question for me is, I said, where are you going to sit on the spectrum? Are you left, right, center, left, whatever? They haven't thought of that. They're engaging some bright companies to help them strategize around that. But the real question, I suppose, Howard, is, will it make a huge difference in South Africa? I don't think, you see, the challenge is she's been a mayor, so her last kind of credentials are around running a city, not national government.
Correct.
And the elections are not for the city, they're right. for the country and
they're
the
not
province.
Not local elections, exactly right.
I think she will get some support in the Western Cape, a lot of support. How much, I don't know, and I think it's probably going to be around the coalition governments. I mean, if she gets enough to wrestle power from the DA, so that, I mean, the curious thing for me will be, what if the DA wins the most support and she's got less than the ANC, but she's kingmaker? Yeah. Will she be willing then to get in bed with the DA again and go into government? And I think that's realistically what you have to look at. What has she got to offer? She's talking a very pro-poor message, but the question I think voters may ask is, when she was in charge of the city, was the city of Cape Town very pro-poor? By her own admission, it wasn't, and she'll say, but it was other people who kind of clipped her wings and she couldn't do that. So it's very interesting. But if I look at the last three parties to have formed in anger, you know, the good doctor from the ANC, Akhang, none of those have fared very well. So I don't know, how well she's going to fare. But she has got seasoned people who have been in politics around her. Where it will go, I'm not quite sure.
All right. So we're going to definitely keep an eye on that one. Lubi Maiki, so thank you as always for your perspective and insight. It is 8:44.